Accession number 21279, real 6.
So, you knew a couple of days ahead then when Arnhem was going to be, as it were?
Yeah, possibly nearer a week, but we had so many disappointments, as I said, being briefed 12 times, and it was all for nothing.
Yeah.
But so this time, we hoped that, right, we've got to pay attention. Our lives will depend on it.
Yeah. Right, so your gliders were all ready, were they?
Yes.
The rest of everything was ready, they were packed. What sort of kit did you take with you?
Well, I saw that a postman has got an award because his pack was too heavy. He was carrying 35 pounds of mail. We had Bergen rucksacks, 70 pounds, and our passengers weren't carrying a load as big as that. But I was going to have my 21st birthday in a few days, so apart from all the extra ammunition, you know, bandoliers of ammunition which was strewn around my person, I'd got chocolate bars, I'd got candles, thinking, right, the good Dutch cafes and pubs would be, the electricity would be off, so I could curry a little bit of favour. I'd also got soap, which might have been welcomed by the lady natives, I don't know, but it was a great big load. Oh, and 36 hand grenades, four of them in pouches, and well, that and the £70 in the rucksack. It was a great big load.
Yeah. So, had you a clear idea what you were to do when you landed?
Oh, yes, yes. Our first thing, we are given a rendezvous point, which we only go to. I mean, the senior infantryman is supposedly in charge, but say he's killed, then we would take over. But we fight on the ground. The American glider pilots didn't do this, by the way. So, and they were paid more highly than us, and they were given commissioned rank, whereas we were sergeants or staff sergeants.
Right.
Which,
when did you get made up to, you were a sergeant when you went, were you?
Yes, well, as soon as I'd finished the, and you know, got this paltry flying badge. And you see, everybody who got back, you'll think, oh, we should stop ranting about this.
No.
But the it looked a paltry second-class badge for second pilots. You can see what they look like on the our stained glass window in Salisbury Cathedral. But we felt peeved that this inferior flying badge was on our chest because we'd done everything that we were asked to do. I know we hadn't got the flying hours in, but that wasn't our fault. And you see, it nettles me even now that the people who were not prisoners got back, they got a few more hours in, and automatically they had the other flying wings.
Yeah, you lost out both ways.
Yeah.
So did you know who your passengers were going to be?
Not until the last moment.
Right.
But I was delighted to find that there were the border regiment, and my father and my grandfather, they were both border regiment people, although my father left it for the Royal Flying Corps. Just as I left the tanks, you know, for the glider pilot regiment. And in fact, I made a point of saying when the we hadn't met the passengers until the actual, you know, loading up thing, I said, any West Cumbrians here? And, well, there were a few people, including people from quite near where I was born. So it was nice to meet them. And well, I think they were pleased to meet me. But just like I was not born in Scotland, or might have been before the maps were redrawn, the you know, there were few people from Cumberland there, because since the First World War, I mean, they mixed them up. It was too depressing, wasn't it, to lose every other man from a little town. So
how did you get the news that you were actually going? You know, when was the announcement made, and how far ahead of actually going and getting on your glider?
Oh, 2 or 3 days.
So you knew the day and the hour.
Oh yes, yep. With the reservation that if the weather had been bad, it would have probably been put back, as D-Day might have been put back by 24 hours. Yeah. But
so what was the atmosphere like for those last couple of days then?
It was pretty electric. I mean, a lot of people wrote to the parents, you know, that sort of thing, because... Well, it's obvious that some people are going to go, aren't they? But we were due to take off at 10:20. We were on the aerodrome at about 6:30. I declined an invitation by a padre to join a little service there. Look where it got me. But
so the padre was all there and ready.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Do you remember him? Was he
no.
one that had been there?
No.
No, it was just one who turned up or who went aware of. Did a lot of people go to the service?
I don't think so, no. And not too many, I don't think there'd be, well, there'd be one or two glider pilots who took off with a hangover, but I'd not been whooping it up in the mess. And I don't know many people who did that sort of thing. Because you might be lucky, you know, if you drink and drive heavily, but you can't get away with it in the plane. So, you know, that was it. So.
So, what was the atmosphere like? Can you remember getting in the glider?
Oh yes, yes, yep.
What do the passengers look like? More nervous than you?
No. I think they were, you know, ready for it. And of course, it's only then that I said, are there any West Cumbrians here? So they were pleased to meet a fellow West Cumbrian, and it enlivened things and maybe encouraged, I don't know.
So they were infantry?
Yes, but special infantry.
Infantry.
They were air landing. Now, all parachutists and all glider pilots are volunteers, and it's difficult. Well, not everybody who volunteers for those things, particularly the glider pilot regiment, get accepted. But the air landing people, they were, their battalions were told, but I'm sure there were selected battalions that had got a good reputation, but they were then drafted in, so they weren't volunteers, and in the paras and the air landing, they got 2 shillings a day. The air landing, the non-volunteers, they got 9 pence a day. So maybe they were pleased for that. But I think it was probably more dangerous. Stuck in the back. And you're sitting, well, they're sitting, like old-fashioned trams. You won't remember anything like that. But you sit facing each other. And, well...
Did they have seats or were they...
It was a slatted platform, and obviously straps there. Otherwise, there'd be quite a few heavy landings where there'd be people scattered and, you know, broken bones. But the landing itself was interesting. But
what about when you took off? You took off from Broadwell.
Yes.
Yeah.
So and you had your tracks. Listed, we knew this from the briefings, it was on our maps. And
how many were taking off? It's been quite sort of tightly organised.
Oh, it was. There was the tug planes were lined up on the runway, and there were coils of these ropes ready, and there were the gliders lined up behind, and it was very well organised. And for where, if a rope had, a tow rope had broken, or a plane's engines had failed, there were tractors alongside so that they could be dragged out of the way. And Oh, it was an excellent operation, so that you see the rope in front, tightened up, neat coils disappear until the thing's taut, and then they begin to go. And what is an interesting sight, the tug lumbers along, then picks up speed, but because we're aerodynamically cleaner and we've got no clutter of engines, we go off first. Seems impolite in a way, but so we hold off when we reach about 6 feet, and because our drag along the ground has disappeared, the tug speed increases, and then that goes along. But he's watching, he's only flying a few feet off to get to get proper airspeed, and then of course when he feels it's safe to do so, he'll bring his undercart up. But meanwhile, we are formating very closely, because, I mean, if we go up too high, we can put his nose down, can't we? And there's a crash. And anyway, after...
So how many took off then? Taking off one at a time? Or?
Yeah, except there are several other airfields nearby. So you've got scores to begin with, then hundreds of glider trains, and then you were marshalled and you knew from your route where you were aiming for. And it was a loose formation, I mean, it couldn't be anything else. But I was disconcerted to notice that it was cloudy and we ran into cloud, which is never good when there's so many planes wallowing about. We noticed returning bombers, and they were coming towards us. They were just coming back, you know, from the continent. And I never heard and never read of any crashes like this, but it was a bit disconcerting. Yes.
You'd rather hope the bombers knew just how many gliders there were about.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Because they might not have been expecting.
No, that's
gliders,
right. Yeah. So I felt just a little bit uneasy. But then... flying over Holland, we started to come under gunfire. There was a big barge, I noticed. Part of it was in the water. It had been hit. Because before we went, ahead of us went typhoons and other strike planes, and there was strafing. And trying to keep German fighters out of the way, because obviously we're very, very vulnerable like that. And had they broken through, well, hundreds would have been shot down. But anyway, I noticed these people firing, and the flak was bursting in the sky, so that was interesting. And I didn't know it then. But because, of course, when something bursts near you, you rock about. And with the noise, because you've not got rowdy engines, you've got quite a fair bit of wind noise, because you've been towed at 120 miles an hour. And anyway, after we'd landed, I noticed there was some damage in the tail of our thing. So they weren't far out at one point. But when we got over the landing zones, we already knew, because we'd probably looked at it more intently than the tug crew. But then over the wire came LZ landing zones in about 5 minutes. So we'd already warned the people behind that we're not too far. So, adjust the gear, that sort of thing. We didn't want people looking for, a bag of this and that. So... And then we were fortunate to be one of the first few. But even so, the sky was really busier than I've ever seen. And it's a pity I'd not been a passenger, because I'd love to have seen this, It would have been, I've seen it on a newsreel since, and it's quite impressive. But then you're looking at the ground and thinking, let's aim for there, because gliders have already landed, and it's a forced landing every time. Some of them were tipping up, some of them were breaking up, some of them were going into some of the few woods, and trees. Anyway, we selected our place.
It was a field, was it? Or?
Yes, but there was like a motorway, or it looked like that, some roadworks as a bank. And when we dug in, and I'm, well, we're both holding the things. He was nominally doing the landing, but it was, it could have been one or the other going, and you know, it would have carried on. But with the soft soil, we weren't holding, and you do have air brakes, powerful air brakes, but it wasn't holding, and we were really ploughing the soil. So we went thudding up to this bank, and the front, where we were sitting, that began to break up a little bit. But my personal weapon there was a rifle. Bob had a Thompson submachine gun. But I was thinking at first of putting a bayonet on. I'm glad I didn't, because as you finally jolted to a halt, you don't want a rifle with a bayonet on skidding about, do you? But anyway, in the event, as the floor broke up as well, earth was rammed into my gun, so I couldn't fire it the first day. In fact, it was about midday for the next day before I could use it. Yeah.
What was your pilot's name, Bob?
Bob Boyce. Yeah. He became ahead, as I was, and then he took orders after that, and he's now Church of England minister, yeah.
So you juddered to a halt.
Yeah.
There was damage to your glider, obviously.
Yes. And the drill is, if I can just mention this, we'd noticed Germans on the other side of this sort of embankment. So we were landing right in the middle of them. This information was given to the border people. And normally, if there'd been nobody about, they would have got out and they would have fanned round the glider in a defensive position to begin with until if it seemed reasonably clear. But we told them that some of them had gone into a culvert at the far end of this thing. So the border people, some of them, I don't know how many, they went over the embankment and they chucked grenades into this, like a culvert that was going through the thing. And it's a bit of poetic license to say they came out as if from a bazooka at the other end, but they came running out and fortunately surrendered straight away. So prisoners were taken, you know, within the first few minutes.
But, so you were on foreign soil.
Yeah, and we'd to watch out because other gliders were coming in. And as the field was becoming more and more packed, it was more and more difficult for them to come in without banging into another one. So there were all sorts of thuds and bangs. And then, of course, the landing zone was being shelled at the time, and small arms stuff was being directed there, so it was quite messy. But
all your borderers were okay up to this point, were they?
Yes, yes. So we did our main job. We got them down safely. In fact, if we'd been able to be beaten back as if by Scotties, you know, we'd done our job, earned our money. But anyway, I forget where the rendezvous was, but we got to there. And then...
was that far away?
Probably about 2 miles. Right. But you don't go straight A to B when you're landing on a battle zone, even though there wasn't too much going on.
Yeah.
You've got to zigzag and hug hedges, that sort of thing. But...
And you went with borderers? You all went together?
Just to begin with... But when they were obviously joining up with other groups of border regiment people, then it was our duty to get to the rendezvous. But it's not as simple as doing that, because we found some wrecked gliders and, with injured people, and we tried to do what we could, which in one case was nothing at all. They were stuck up in some trees, and... this 75mm howitzer, which is quite a hefty gun, and the jeep had broken free of the shacklings, and anyway, the two pilots were dead.
Were there a lot of casualties in that field?
No, not too many, but if it had just been an exercise, inevitably there would be some. I was on a big tank operation, and several Poles were killed, and it's just, they had an exuberant style, you know, going too quickly over ridges and obstacles. I liked the Poles very much, I admired them, but you do lose people on exercises. Well, on operations, you lose more.
Mm. Things will happen, won't they?
Mm. But for the actual casualties, I remember as a boy at school being told of the force was decimated, and that seemed terribly bad. But that means the force loses 1 in 10. Well, I didn't know it on landing, but only 1 in 10 got away. So, you know, it was as savage as that.
So on the landing, only 1 in 10?
No, by the end of the 9 days. Right. And it was a ferocious 9 days, because I experienced tanks again, but with the German tanks, the Panthers and the Royal Tigers. In fact, I was in the 9th Armoured Division, which was just a training division. It never fought, you know, as a body. But there were two SS Panzer divisions, the 9th and the 11th.
Right.
So it seemed a bit unfair, that.
Yeah. So you got to your first rendezvous?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I don't know the details. I can't think of the details there, except we were, it was farmland, and there were dead cattle lying about, and there were nice Dutch girls bringing out, coming out of these farms, and they'd got aprons full of apples, and I took a few apples, you know, with thanks, shoved them in my smock, and it was good too, because we were only given 48 hours rations, and that's all I had, apart from the few apples and a few more apples that I scrounged in 9 days.
Mm.
So, and water was very, very short, and actually it's much worse being without something to drink than it is something to eat. But well, we moved on to various places in Oosterbeek. The main force, this was the first lift on Sunday the 17th of September, and we had to hang around there to protect the second landing, which would be on the following day. Now, if all the force had been able to drive on to Arnhem to secure the bridge, it would have been a different ending. But It was faulty planning here. The fact that the main force of the Sunday force, like me, had to stop to protect the landing zones for the second force, second lift coming in. But I think only one para battalion actually set off to do the 8 miles to Arnhem. And again, it's not going to be a straight 8 miles. There's a lot of jinking around and fighting going on. And there were two or three glider pilots with the force, because those who had not been able to get to a rendezvous for whatever reason, then if they saw a force, they can't or wouldn't want to go around as freelancers. They would say, we might as well join you until we meet, you know, other GP groups. So it was then going to, houses, clearing of houses and woods. There was one wood where we got a very bad mauling. And then we had to move from there because so many people were being killed. They were firing at the tops of the trees, and this means you're doing no good in a slit trench if there are explosions above you like that. So finally we were told to gather. This was mainly glider pilots, and we'd to cross the road and occupy the houses. And we'd only got there. Crossing the road, some people were shot because you're visible, obviously, and they would know where we were going to appear. And the thing, though, that impresses me, I'd been for several days, two or three days, maybe a little bit more, in woodland and heathland, so I don't hear my boots banging away. But the noise of our boots as we clattered onto this road, and then, all right, three or four would go for that house and, you know, that sort of thing. But before we got nicely settled, in fact, I'd met a friend of mine, and I was going to stick with him. And blow me, we'd only been told to act on getting up and then take those houses when there'd been two, three blasts of a whistle or something. It was a false order. We were then told to get back, and I don't know. It must happen in every battle.
A false order. Someone had given the wrong order.
Yeah, somebody had decided, let's get out of this for goodness' sake, and you know, and it was terrible because obviously we'd lose one or two going back. Anyway, then back, and then it was well holding these houses. So.
What sort of houses were they?
There were working. I think there were small terraces, newish houses, and they were probably using the class thing that Brits do. They were either be lower middle class, that sort of thing. But the house I was in, it had nice furniture, a few pictures, a bookcase, and as we were pulling furniture up against the windows to, make it more secure, when it was quiet, I looked in the bookcase and I saw an English copy of Pilgrim's Progress. So I took it out and I thought, I've never read it. My mother had read this too as part of it to begin with, but I've never read it fully. So when things are quiet, I'll read it. They never got quiet. That's a terrible thing.
Right. So where were the Germans in relation to your house?
In the houses opposite. Or the next to that, and they were bringing tanks through the gardens, yeah. And they were mortaring us, and they didn't try much infantry assault, except we got them at night, and I'd fallen asleep because I'd been absolutely whacked. In fact, we were all whacked because there was very little sleep. In fact, it's only catnapping now and again. But, and in this... in this house, there was a little harmonium, and the chap was musical. He'd got books, and there were cellars. Although I think I told you earlier, we were told to keep out of the cellars. Then the Germans would have no excuse for going to the cellars, you know, tossing grenades down or anything like that. And this was honoured by our people, unless we were wounded. But I must have been nodding, and to keep myself awake, I'd lifted the cover up on this harmonium, thinking if I'd nodded, there would be a not too noisy chord crashing out. But that was my reasoning anyway. But it wasn't that I heard. It was bomb and gunfire at the back, and I'd let them down. But anyway, we drove them off, you know. But it was, we were doing...
A tight spot.
It was a tight spot. In fact, we did get a captain coming along, and he said, how are you lot? We were about 12 in this house, and, as Brits say, not too bad. And he said, we're not going to get out of this, So don't you think it's time to surrender? And everybody bar one, who wasn't a glider pilot, and he was wearing a woman's coat because we were cold. When you're tired, you get very cold, and when you're hungry, you get cold.
Stop you there. Right. So, Williams, end of reel 6.